Do you want to know more about vampires, werewolves, zombies, and man-made monsters?
Would you like to know more about the classic Universal monster movies responsible for creating the entire horror genre?
Then listen to our podcast, Let's Talk Monsters,
where we discuss everything monsters.
Available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everybody, we're back. Welcome to Booby Trap Chat. I'm Leanna.
I'm Mike.
And today we have a special guest with us. She's the sister of Willard Allensworth. Her name's Donna.
Yeah, and for those of you who don't remember, or maybe haven't listened to the entire Booby Trap, all 8 episodes, Willard was one of the scouts in Chuck's troop, Troop 85, and he was also one of Chuck's victims, and he was really good friends with Richie, probably Richie's best friend for a while there, right before Richie got killed. And then afterward, Willard was arrested along with Chuck when Chuck was trying to kidnap and torture Jerry Bukowski. And then after that, Willard went on to turn against Chuck and testify against him, which helped to put Chuck in jail for, I think, what was it, 3 years? That was the three-year sentence. Actually, it was supposed to be 7, but Chuck got out, only serving half the amount of time. So Willard, unfortunately, passed away in 2000. Also, I wanted to add that, you know, Willard went to school with both me and Leanna, and we hung out quite a bit at Oak Grove Park, and I used to see Willard around the neighborhood and stuff like that, and I considered him to be a friend and a pretty nice guy. So that's the general background. Donna and Willard were pretty close siblings. And before Willard passed away, he told Donna a lot of the stuff that happened with Chuck. And so Donna is essentially, she's representing Willard. Next best thing, next closest thing to getting Willard's story is getting it via Donna. So without further ado, I am introducing Donna.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you for that.
Yeah. So my first question to you is, let's just talk about the neighborhood, because I never went to your house. When I did hang out with Willard, it was, you know, probably at Oak Grove Park, or I used to see him at TJ a lot. We didn't have any classes together, but I used to see him in the hallways and stuff like that. And so what part of Miami did you guys live in? Were you in Chuck's immediate area, or were you closer to me, or were you?
Yeah, so we are actually, my brother and I, we actually grew up in Hialeah, and in 1976, my parents had decided they wanted to be closer to my grandparents in North Miami Beach. So we actually lived on 154th and 11th. So where Chuck's house was, it was right down the street from us. So I could, you know, we could walk out our front door, probably go about 15 feet to the left, and there was another street, and we could see Chuck's house. You know, like, it was probably 6 or 7 houses away. So we lived, you know, right in the neighborhood, you know, with everybody else. I felt like it was a very working class area. Nice. We had nice neighbors, and you know, we really liked the area, even though we had just came from everything we'd ever known living somewhere else. But my parents really liked that area, and we were close to our grandparents, and it was a very family-oriented area.
Yeah.
It was really quite, for us, a good choice for them at the time for us to move there. And, you know, now we were living our best life. We had 2 bathrooms. So,
right. Yeah.
You know. So, you know, when you think back to it, it's like, really?
Very nice neighborhood, very safe. You had the 163rd Street Mall.
Yeah.
Like within walking distance, right?
Absolutely. You know, we rode our bikes, and we literally played on the street.
Yeah.
You know, every night. Willard was when he was first born, was born with a heart murmur. And he used to, I don't know if you remember, he had a big scar. When he got older, he used to tell women that a shark bit him. And, you know, he had a great sense of humor. And I was like, what girls believe you have a shark bite? It's a perfect cut. Yeah. You know, so he always maintained that. And I love that, you know, in memory of him, that he always, you know, he always had a good sense of humor. And then a couple of years before we moved to North Miami Beach, my brother was hit by a car and almost died.
Ooh.
And lost his kidney. So, you know, as you look back and I, you know, share, you know, what happened to him, and, you know, he really had 9 lives,
right.
You know, so for him to come through everything, you know, it was amazing. When we moved into North Miami Beach, he was in 6th grade and I was in 3rd grade. That first year, things were very normal for us. You know, we had a very normal house. Parents worked, and you know, we were in school.
Now, did Willard go to Oak Grove? Because I kind of remember.
Yes.
Yeah, he wasn't in Ms. Lane's class because I was in Ms. Lane's class, but I do remember him being at Oak Grove.
I had Ms. Lane too. Funny historical fact. Yeah, she was a character. I don't remember his 6th grade teacher.
Yeah, Ms. Lane. No one forgets Ms. Lane. And I do remember, you know, now that you mentioned the thing about him having been hit by a car and that kind of stuff, I do remember the first time I met him that he had some sort of ailment or something.
Donna, how do you remember how it was that you came to meet Chuck?
At a Boy Scout meeting.
Did that happen through Richie, or did he just through the neighborhood, like a flyer, or through the school?
Through the school. Mm-hmm. I got to go to Brownies, and, you know, my parents thought it would be good to put him in Boy Scouts. I always thought it was a way that they were trying to get rid of us. And my parents had some struggles. So I think it was an opportunity that they got a little bit of free time. You know, mm-hmm. Because I would go do my Brownie thing with my troop. And then, you know, my brother was interested in Boy Scouts. And so, you know, I think it was just the best of both worlds. So it was an opportunity for my parents to have some downtime and for us to do that. He was recruited at Oak Grove because you're 3 minutes from an elementary school. So why not go there and recruit children who are looking for something, and we're going to make a man out of your boy.
Great.
Right. Yeah. When Willard went to join the Boy Scouts or for the Boy Scout meeting, was Chuck already the scoutmaster of that troop?
Well, somebody from the Boy Scouts was going to come to our house to try to get him to sign up so that they could meet, and there was a level of trust there. That's how that worked out, was that we were having a Boy Scout representative come over to the house to recruit and sign him up so that my parents would give him permission to do all these wonderful outings and get to be a part of the Boy Scouts.
Mm-hmm. And that person who came was Chuck to have him sign up?
Yes, that person was Chuck. And
do you remember that when he came to the house?
It was a night I'll never forget. I can tell you where everybody sat at the table. I can tell you my mother was not a good cook. My mother made meat sauce, spaghetti meat sauce. She made garlic bread with white bread that she used to bake in the oven. I sat next to my brother. My grandparents were at the table. They were fiercely protective of my brother. When I think I shared, my brother was the favorite. Everybody in my family knows this. This isn't like a secret. My grandparents were there because they lived on 9th and 151st. They were 3 blocks from us.
Mm-hmm.
And then Chuck was there, my mom and my dad. And you could feel the thickness in the air.
Mm.
He was talking. My father just loved his demeanor. You know, he was very suave with my mother. Like, he had this just sense of that they were going to make a man out of their son. And my grandparents didn't say anything. My grandparents were very vocal. They didn't say anything. And my grandfather looked at me, and he was kept talking to me, like asking me like how my day was at school and everything. And that he didn't ever once look at Chuck. He had nothing to say to Chuck. So dinner was probably over in, I would say, 20 minutes. At this point, Chuck left. And of course, my dad was like, yep, he's going to sign him up. And it was the best thing since sliced bread. Well, my grandparents started screaming at my mother and father. He's a Finoki. He's a faggot. What are you thinking? We do not want Willard involved with him. We do not want Willard involved with Boy Scouts. He's a faggot. He's queer. How can you not see that? I mean, it caused such a fight. Of course, at that point, my parents were like, you have to go to your room.
You have to go to your room. Yeah, exactly.
Go to my room. You know, of course, but we had no air conditioning. So
you were listening anyway, I'm sure.
Of course.
Yes.
And I mean, who doesn't listen to this? And, you know, my brother was like in tears. You know, you could hear he was upset because he really wanted to join the Boy Scouts because all of his friends were in the Boy Scouts. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I want to be a Boy Scout. And my grandparents were like, if you let him, like, that was probably the second to the final straw that my grandfather had with my father. My grandmother was just beyond hurt. My grandfather was furious. My grandfather ruled the house because my grandfather had the money.
Can I ask you a question really quick?
Yes,
just for some clarity. Were these your father's parents or your mom's parents?
So that's why I say those were my mom's parents.
Okay.
Right. That makes sense that they'd be mad at your dad.
Yeah. I mean, they were, and they had also helped them buy the house, and they also had helped them financially because my grandparents were very successful. So, and they felt territorial over my brother. First of all, the meeting was very bizarre. Like the dinner, Chuck just had this, he always had like this smirk. If anybody knew Chuck, he always had like this smirk on his face. He always had like this confidence, like this smirk, like I know a secret, like he just like I know something, you know, like he just had this way. So I even remember that and being like, I just knew something was off.
Yeah.
And then for my grandparents, the fight, and my grandfather was not a fighter, so I just want to verbally say, like, the verbal fight, you know, we had those jealousy windows. Mm-hmm. So the fight carried outside into the front of the house. They said that was it. They weren't going to help anymore if they allowed him to go to the Boy Scouts. You know, and back then, make no doubt, Carmen Falco is a child molester. He is a sexual predator and a murderer. But back then, when they said faggot and queer and Finoki, you know, that was just the time. You know, that was just how, you know, they said it.
Right.
And, you know, back then I thought, oh my, you know, I was like, oh, he's queer. You know, like, I was a little girl, not putting the ramifications of what they were implying.
Right.
Was there much of an age difference between your parents and Chuck?
No, my dad and him were about the same age.
Okay, that makes sense. And then, so your grandparents would have been more like World War II generation, right?
That is correct.
My father was much older. You know, my dad was 45 when I was born. And as I was growing up, he was closer in age to a lot of my friends' grandparents. Something about that generation that they could spot stuff like Chuck could not be, when you say the smirk and like, I have a secret and, you know, he thinks he's one-upping everyone. My dad could spot that a mile away. And there's something about going through World War II and the Depression and all of that. They could see bullshit, you know?
Yeah, I feel like my grandmother was like that.
Yeah, I remember your grandma.
You remember.
Yeah. I mean, and there was something about them.
They're more no-nonsense, yeah.
The next generation, like their children, you know, the people who were born in the 40s, didn't seem to have that same kind of radar, you know? So I'm not surprised that your parents would have been like totally suckered by Chuck because he was good at that. He's very manipulative. We all know that. But your grandparents are like, no, like, come on. Like, that's like, this guy's ridiculous, you know?
Was Carrie with him when he came to the house?
Yes, she was.
And
she
what do you quiet. Remember about her? She's such a mystery.
She was quiet the whole time.
That's what I remember about her. Silent, just always quiet.
Very quiet the whole time. You know, all of my family's interaction with her, it was always, she was always very quiet, very reserved. Mm-hmm. You know, of course, my brother said things about that. My parents at that time, when you think about it, we were there 76. In that 70 time frame, you know, my parents were smoking grass.
Of course.
You know, so, you know, so, hey, you know, we're going to turn on a little Marvin Gaye or something. And
right.
The kids are, at, you know, I'm at Brownies and Willard's at Boy Scouts. You know, I think it was just a different time, you know, like they really didn't have the foresight to see, hold on, I'm giving my most prized possession here to somebody I really don't know, where I had other friends that boys and girls whose parents were like, hell no, you're not spending the night at somebody's house. Hell right. no, you're not going on a camping trip with somebody.
Right.
Yeah. You know, but here my parents were like, here you go. Welcome to the neighborhood. Get out, you know?
So it's funny you say that because once again, the generational differences, my father was the kind, you know, he was kind of person who was like, I'd rather you stay home. I'd rather spend time with you. Whereas my mom would like kick me and my brother out and go, yeah, spend two nights. And my mom was much younger than my father. I mean, Leanna and I have covered that a lot in some of our chats about sort of like the neglectful parents and, you know, I want to say they were selfish, but
they were, but it was the time. It was the time of like, you know, bad things happen other places. They don't happen here.
Yeah, right. And it's weird concoction, you know, because in those days, our generation, Gen X, we were brought up to still respect authority figures.
Unquestionably.
Unlike today, where parents are really, really like, don't trust anyone, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
It was definitely a situation that was set up perfectly for people like Chuck, for these sexual predators.
Absolutely.
I wanted to sort of advance a little bit and try to get Richie involved in here. I knew Richie for longer than I knew Willard, because like you said, you guys didn't move to the area until 76. But I remember around that time, sixth, seventh grade, that Richie and Willard were like best friends.
Oh yeah, they were thick as thieves, yeah.
And there's a police report from 1977, I want to say, 70. Maybe it's 76, but I think it's 77. And I mean, these guys are like 12. I mean, Willard was 12.
Uh-huh.
They were playing hooky from school. I think they were both supposed to be in seventh grade. They were hanging out in the neighborhood and just sneaking around. And a cop went driving by and noticed that, hey, those kids should be in school. So the cop pulled over and went to question them. And they ran and they hid behind a car. Which is kind of silly, but they, he's like,
but they were 12.
Yeah, they were 12. And so they hid behind a car and the cop just walked over and said, okay, like I can see you, like you might as well just come out. And so the kids came out and he filed a report. I guess the parents had to come down to the police station and, you know, get the kids and all of that stuff. But the cop asked them, he said, what are you doing? And Richie's response was, we're looking for a set of keys. And so the cop says, you know, okay, well, I'll help you find them. And so they walked around and Richie took them into like some front yard, someone's house or like in some bushes or something. Because the cop was saying like, well, what are you guys doing? Like, why aren't you in school? And Richie said, oh, well, I lost these keys and, you know, we were going to go to school, but I couldn't go to school until I find the keys. And so the cop was trying to help them find the keys. And if there were no keys or they couldn't find the keys. Ultimately is what the cop wrote in the report. The cop said, well, how did you lose them? And Richie said, I was twirling them around my finger. And they slipped off and went flying into the bushes or something like that. So that was an incident that, I mean, no big deal. I mean, kids are just kids. You know, they were truant from school. No big deal. Do you remember that incident, the one that I just described, of Willard getting in trouble?
I do remember him getting picked up by the police for skipping school. But, you know, my parents, back then, girls were treated differently than boys, at least in my house. So they always, my parents always tried to shield me from some of my brother's bad behaviors. But I do remember them because, you know, they talked about it and he was going to be in trouble. And of course they were going to tell Chuck, because then the discipline would that he, you know, might face harsher consequences at Boy Scouts, or he may not be allowed to go to Boy Scouts. But we both know that that never turned out. He, you know, Chuck was always there to help mold, train, and discipline my brother whenever my brother acted out.
And given the weird nature of this story with Richie breaking into Chuck's house, and we know there was this keys thing, which I told in the original Booby Trap, that I found out later on when Tony Simmons gave a deposition that there were a set of stolen keys that Richie was using, or the kids were using, to get into Chuck's house. And Tony Simmons tried to pin that on me, as if I was the one who was like holding the keys. So it's strange to me that when I found that document, and of all of the excuses that Richie could have used as to why they were skipping school, he brought up keys, like a set of keys. And so that always struck me as odd. You know, aside from that, it's essentially a non-event. Like, the kids really weren't doing anything wrong, as far as I know. They were just skipping school. But it was weird to me that, once again, attention was brought back to a set of keys. And so my question to you is, do you remember any of that stuff? Did Willard ever tell you about the stuff that Richie was doing, or that they were going into Chuck's house without Chuck's permission, or whatever it was? It's still a mystery, to be honest. I mean, I've tried to shed some light on it, but there's still a lot of, you know, incidents that are like, I'm not sure. What I remember as a kid was that I was told by a few people that Richie was breaking into Chuck's house to steal pot. That was sort of like the main reason. But then, of course, later on, we started suspecting that Chuck had taken pictures of these kids and in compromising ways, and was using the pictures to blackmail the kids so that they wouldn't tell on him. That was his MO. And that Richie was breaking in there and trying to get pictures. There was a second deposition that Tony Simmons gave where he clearly said, because Chuck has pictures of me and I want those pictures. I don't want Chuck to have those pictures of me.
Yeah, exactly what you said. You know, my brother told me afterwards, not during that time, when Richie was shot, that whole incident was, you know, it was crazy because all the police were out there and it was somebody at Chuck's house and they didn't know who it was. But later my brother had shared that they were actually trying to get drugs, but they wanted to get the pictures because they wanted those pictures, but they also wanted to use them against Chuck.
Hmm.
They wanted to have those pictures to use against him.
That's that.
The police came across those pictures when they were in the house after the shooting. And
yes, yeah, they did.
And they couldn't submit them as evidence because...
Right, because they weren't, they didn't have a warrant.
Right.
No, I'm very, familiar. I'm very familiar with, you know, everything that, and again, you know, when all of that was happening, and I know you'd covered it in the podcast, you know, when the night of the shooting and all that, but I don't want to jump forward, but, you know, we can go back and forth. But, you know, when my brother got arrested in 82, that's really when everything was exposed. You know, everything for my brother was laid out on the table by, you know, Miami PD. And that's when he had, for all intents and purposes, a come to Jesus meeting with my parents and, you know, really started, you know, talking. And I think it was cathartic for him. You know, it was his moment to be, you know, I can get out from this, you know. But yes, that was what Willard had told me, that that's what they were trying to do when they were when Richie was breaking into the house.
So it wasn't just pot. I mean, they probably took a little bit of pot too while they were
but
there.
It was the pictures, because he had the pictures always locked up.
Right.
You know, when you go back and you start thinking about, like, when I start to think about, my brother was just a normal kid like I was. Like, yeah, we fought as brother and sister. Shit, who didn't? But within the first year of him going into Boy Scouts, he morphed. My brother took so many drugs that it was a smorgasbord. I remember my brother would come home with handful, you know, and I looked at these pills and I, you know, I didn't even know what they were. And he was like, oh, they're Quaaludes. And I was like, Quaaludes? Why are you taking like medication? Not realizing, I mean, he was high. So when he would go down to Chuck's, when they were down, he was ripped. I mean, he was ripped. Uh-huh. And, you know, my parents, they were smoking grass. So they were already a little mellow trying to get into bed. So when my brother would come back from Chuck's, you know, with the kids, with Richie, hanging out with all them, they were wasted. I mean, they weren't just like, oh, you had a little sip of, you know, drink at your friend's house. They were like schnocked, like hammered.
Yeah.
Just out of their mind. I mean, who gives a 12 or 13 year old Quaaludes?
Right, right.
So you started to notice that pretty early on, the first year.
Like he didn't smile anymore. He didn't have this zest. Sometimes he told me later he wouldn't remember who he was with or who was with him or who was on top of him or how many there were, because he always said it was never just Chuck.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. And that feeds into something that Leanne and I, we've been talking about this and researching it, but the whole pedophile ring thing, we don't want to jump ahead too far, but we do know that some of the stuff that you told Leanna that Willard had told you was quite shocking and really helps to provide evidence of the likelihood that there was a pedophile ring, that Chuck was, you know, linked into some sort of national or international pedophile ring. And it's not only your story too, because there's a couple other people that I've spoken to, some scouts, ex-scouts, who also mentioned that strange men would come along on some of these camping trips.
Yeah. The skipping school, you know, my parents would be, oh, they found a little joint. Like he came home wasted.
Yeah.
Like this wasn't a joint. This was... I mean, I remember him having angel dust.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. He really just stuck to the scouts. Those scouts really just stuck together, right?
Absolutely.
They didn't go to dances. They didn't go to the beach. They didn't do any of the regular stuff that the kids did. Nope. So then at some point, people start to notice that. And I always say that I think one of the things that went on with Richie and why, you know, he was trying to get those pictures, there was a change in him, and Mike also noticed it. Like he was inquiring about things. I think he just wanted to be a normal kid.
Amen. And I think that's, you know, my brother always struggled up until the day he died with, why didn't I have a normal, you know, like who does this? Why, you know, and I was like, you were a victim.
Right.
You were a victim. You were trusting somebody, you know, but he did. You're so right. Like he just wanted to fit in. My brother's eating habits. He would say on the weekend, they didn't eat.
Yeah, because he would be doing drugs.
Right.
Drugs work better on an empty stomach.
He told me that at one particular weekend, they were out on the boat. And Chuck used to make them fist fight each other. And he said sometimes he would want them to fight naked. And the last person on the boat was like, you're the king of the boat, you know? Between Richard Brush's death and before my brother's arrest, there was a time when my brother was riding his golf cart. He had this little golf cart. I don't remember if you remember, he had a golf cart. He used to ride the golf cart. And he was riding the golf cart, and a car was coming at him to try to run him over. And it wasn't on accident. The night that Richie died, you know, that really was a pivotal moment for Chuck, because, you know, everything changed. You know, my brother had lots of issues and problems during the time he became a Boy Scout and up until Richie died. But then when Richie died, the behavior became, it intensified. It became toxic. You could tell that there was like an obsession, but it wasn't a normal obsession, because every time you would talk to him or see him, he was always high. And I think it was Chuck instigating him. And Chuck, you know, the whole time my brother was molested, the whole time Chuck, my brother told me this from when he started the Scouts, you know, the first thing Chuck had said was, I'm going to show the pictures. I'm going to tell your parents that you're gay. I'm going to tell your parents that you're, you know, so my brother lived with this fear of being outed, but, you know, he knew there were other kids, but, you know, that was the mind game.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because the kids never thought, well, if this guy has nude pictures of us, like he's going to be, you know, like he's the one who's going to get into trouble. It was such a big deal at that time to be outed. That was enough of a threat for them.
Right. And of course, the thing is that, you know, well, back then it wasn't like it is now. You know, if you get caught with pornography on your phone of children in 2024, you're going to jail. You know, yeah. Back then, oh, you must have, because my brother said, you know, that was his biggest fear. And my brother struggled with it because obviously the acts of sex, he thought people would perceive that they would be consensual. He's like, I don't even know. And I was like, brother, you were high. This guy was molesting you. This was a premeditated, calculated deviant of society who just did nothing but wanted to hurt kids.
Yeah.
Right. And within a larger network of those people. It's like organized crime, basically.
It is. And this, you know, just keep in mind, Chuck molested dozens and dozens of boys.
Oh, I know.
Dozens upon dozens of kids in that neighborhood. And it all had to do with this one guy. It all came from him. You were very close to it too, with Tony.
I was very close to it, but I was lucky. I was very lucky to be on the periphery. And, you know, like I told in the regular booby trap that my one meeting with Chuck was I didn't see that side, Donna, that you described when he came to recruit your brother. I never saw the smirk. I never saw the cool Chuck. I saw the batshit crazy Vietnam vet who's going to slit my throat Chuck. And so I never, like, that was my one and only meeting with the guy. When Tony and I walked away from that meeting, I almost kicked Tony's ass for putting me in that situation. And I said, I don't know what you guys, like, I don't know who thinks this guy is cool. That guy is not cool. That guy's a fucking asshole, okay? And, you know, Chuck threatened to come to my house because he thought I was the one breaking into his house. And I think he probably, knowing what I know now about Chuck, he probably scoped out, you know, he probably wasn't lying about knowing that we always had the front door open, like the screen door, like that he could just walk in, and he knew the layout of my house. And when he threatened me, he said, I could just walk through, go down the hallway while you're asleep and slit your throat and no one would know who did it or something like that. But I think that he was smart enough. Chuck was smart enough because he had really good survival skills. When he saw my brother and his friends hanging out at my house, Chuck's like, there's no way I'm going to go through those guys, right? So I was protected. And I was just lucky that I was protected, that I had a situation where Chuck would not want to fuck with our crew, you know?
Right.
So there's the kids who were abused by Chuck, and then there was the kids that Chuck wouldn't mess with because he knew better, which is the group I fall in. But then there's Tony Simmons, who really wanted to be part of that. Like, he wanted what Richie had. He wanted what Willard had, which is really odd, you know? And I told that story of when he came to my house and he was supposed to go on the camping trip and he was all disappointed. And he's, you know, he just said, oh man. I said, well, what do you want to go camping for? I was like, you know, is that really that much fun? It's like, just like watch TV and stuff. Isn't that better? You know, because that's the way I was. And he said, no. He goes, you don't understand. They've got all these drugs and they get wasted. They get like totally wasted. Tony wanted part of that lifestyle.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Right. The shooting riveted the neighborhood. If you remember, I mean, it made national headlines.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
This Boy Scout leader defending his home.
Yeah, and that's what it was about. It wasn't about a dead 14-year-old kid.
Nobody spoke up at that point to say, wait a second.
Right.
You know, what's going on? My parents, son of a bitch. That's what happens when you break into somebody's house.
Exactly.
You know, they all had this, but you know, inside my brother was dying.
Yeah.
You know, inside my brother had lost his best friend and knew that Chuck's house probably should have been burned to the ground, you know? So But and during that time, then, you know, a lot of people looked to my brother. A lot of people were angry with my brother. You know, a lot of kids who had escaped Chuck or they might have known somebody, they were really angry because my brother was still part of this Boy Scout troop. But back then, he's a 14-year-old kid. I mean, he's being, you know, tortured by somebody, and his drug problem only got worse.
Right.
Not because of the drugs were one thing, but my brother needed deep, serious psychological counseling. And, you know, it's ironic looking back throughout his life, you know, everything he did and everything he helped with, not once did anybody from the state of Florida, Miami, PD, anybody go, oh, we're going to get him counseling. You know, we should get this kid counseling. But, you know, he had suffered so much during those years and had so many, he didn't know who some of his friends were at that point after Richie died.
Yeah. What do you think really happened that late afternoon that Richie got shot? Do you suspect that it's not like the official, there's something wrong with the official story like I do? You know, there was that orange tank top that was found next to Richie's body that, to this day, nobody's been able to give me a sufficient answer as to where that thing came from. We haven't really talked much about Jerry and the role that Jerry played in all of this, because we all know that Jerry was with Richie. That's been confirmed when Richie broke in the house. Now, there's this possibility that maybe Tony Simmons was with them. That has not been confirmed. I just wanted to know what you think, because you know, Willard obviously shared stuff with you over the years before he passed away. And I'm sure Willard had suspicions as to what happened, how Richie was actually shot, or whether the official story is valid or not. I'm just curious to know what you think.
So my brother always thought there was more than just Richie and Jerry. He thought there was always a third person involved because of how to get into the window in Chuck's house. He does believe that there were two people that hoisted him in.
That makes sense.
It does make sense.
You have to know Florida, and you have to know the way these houses were constructed, and you have to know the kind of window this was. And the way the glass was broken, it would have been really hard for Richie to get up there, certainly by himself.
Right. Yeah. That makes sense, Donna. I never thought about that. Two people hoisted him up.
That's what he always believed. He always thought it could have been Tony. The focus was always, for some reason, Chuck was fixated on Jerry.
Yeah.
When Richie died, when they found that out, that really changed, like I said, it changed my brother, but it also made Chuck even more mentally unstable. Because now everything he knew, everything he thought, he was so well connected, well protected. These kids aren't going to say anything. I've been safe this whole time. Now I've got kids trying to break into my house to get pictures and get drugs. Like, now he has, you know, has been potentially exposed. But my brother always thought there were three. It was never just Jerry and Richie.
Yeah. And then that brings me back to the keys dilemma, which is who had the keys, and is it possible that they might have used the keys to go in the house and then they saw the gun, and then, but then why would Richie go through the door and trigger the gun? And it's a really weird story. And it's really hard to get confirmation. The only people who really know beyond the shadow of a doubt and are still alive would be Jerry and Chuck. And neither one of them is talking or saying anything.
No. I want my brother to be remembered that he was a victim, but in the end, he actually became a hero.
He did.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's part of the story that Leanna and I are trying to tell.
Yeah.
Includes that. It includes, yeah, you know, the role that Willard played and how in the end, what he did was extremely brave.
Wait till you hear that. We're going to save that because, When I tell you when he became state's evidence, we'll save that for the next one, because
you
won't believe when I tell you what happened there.
Okay, let's just leave it at that then.
Yeah.
So we'll pick this up next time, and thanks, Donna. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Donna.
I appreciate it. Thank you all.
If you like this podcast, please subscribe. Leave us 5 stars and a review. Thanks.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Do you want to know more about vampires, werewolves, zombies, and man-made monsters?
Would you like to know more about the classic Universal monster movies responsible for creating the entire horror genre?
Then listen to our podcast, Let's Talk Monsters,
where we discuss everything monsters.
Available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, or wherever you get your podcasts.